Welcome to Switchblade Sisters. Welcome to Switchblade Sisters. Welcome to Switchblade Sisters, where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. I'm April Wolf, and today I'm so ecstatic to have one of my favorite people here, living legend Barbara Crampton, writer, producer, director Aline Brosh McKenna here, actor, writer, director Lynn Shelton to the show. Hi, Lynn. Writer, director Nia DaCosta here with me. Hi, Nia. Producer Drea Clark. Writer, director Mary Lambert here with me. Hi, Mary.
Writer, director Gina Prince Bythewood.
Writer, director Jennifer Kent with me. Hi, Jennifer. Actor, writer, director Bria Grant here today. Hi. Today, I'm really excited to have writer Kiwi Smith with me. Hi. Writer, director Kelly Reichart here with me. Hi. I'm so honored and excited to have writer, director Deborah Granick here with me. Hello, Deborah. Writer-director Issa Lopez. Writer-director Daisy Von Schuller Mayer with me. Actor-writer-director Sophia Takal.
To have writer-author Tanana Rave Du with me. Hi!
The movie that you chose to talk about today is one that I did not foresee. The film that she chose to talk about today really surprised me. The Witch Who Came from the Sea. And it's Brian De Palma's body double, Jackass.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Star Trek Generations. John Waters' Polyester. Bob Rafelson's Black Widow. Jonathan Glazer's Birth.
Truly, madly, deeply.
It's Mad Max Fury Road. Amy, could you tell us why you chose The Peanut Butter Solution as your fave genre film? Today's episode will give you some spoilers, but that shouldn't stop you from listening before you watch. As always, my motto is that it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie worth watching, especially for this movie. There's no way we can spoil this for you. Go ahead. Welcome to Switchblade Sisters. Hey, it's me here, the real me, not the recorded me, but I'm recorded as well this time too. Switchblade Sisters, where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. I'm April Wolf. Every week I invite a new female filmmaker on, a writer, director, actor, or producer, and we talk in depth about one of their fave genre films, perhaps one that's influenced their own work in some small way. And today is a little different because it's our final episode, final. And instead of slicing and dicing a genre film, we are slicing and dicing this show. We still have guests, though. I don't want to let anyone down. Our guests are pretty epic, in fact, and you will recognize them. You've heard their voices before many times on the show, in fact. First, we have film critic and frequent Switchblade Sisters host, Katie Walsh. Katie, hi.
Hi. It's so fun to be a guest on this podcast. I love it. Oh, and thank you
welcome.
For having me.
Oh, it's so lovely just to see your face on the screen. Our next guest, this person, you know, she's built up a legend on the show. She's a former guest as well as a wrangler of other guests for the show and just a good friend, Drea Clark. Hi, Drea.
Hi, April. I'm crying already. Is that okay? I started crying midway through that opening. That's the energy I'm going to bring today.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I heard Lynn Shelton's name, and I got a little teary-eyed, I got to say. Mm.
Indeed.
This is going to be a crying one, I think. Oh, having a good one. I don't have any tissues available. It's going to get snotty in here. And the coolest part, though, is that we have another guest who is often, in fact, always behind the scenes. It's just that you never really hear him. His fingers are on every part of the show. We have producer Casey popping in here. Hi, Casey.
Hi. Wow. I'm on the other side. This is very exciting.
Yeah. Casey O'Brien, folks.
You decided it's your first time to get heard, so you're going to start with hi.
You shouldn't have had Drea on this finale. Very cruel.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I think we just canceled Drea.
Drea was yes, just canceled. Good.
I knew it was coming sometime.
This show obviously is a little bit different. This is more of a farewell episode. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about is actually how we make the show. Sometimes people are interested in that. And it is a process. It's a process in the same way that making a film is a process. And, you know, we kind of want to demystify that. But we also want to get into some memorable moments from the show's history. And we also want to hear some messages from listeners and some past guests. Now, something you will hear is that there's only going to be, I think, about 10 messages that we're going to play, Casey. Is that correct?
I hope we get, yes.
We're going to try to get to about 10.
We're going to try to get through, 10 messages. We had about 50 messages people call in. So they're all wonderful. April, you can listen to them after we're done with this. And
exactly. Yeah. So for those of you know, who don't get a kind of shout out or get to hear their messages on the episode, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to listen to all of them and try to respond to all of them. And just so you know that we've actually heard them and took them in and appreciate them.
Were also well put together. All the voice messages were just so thoughtful. So it was very hard for me to whittle down just to 10.
Well, I definitely saw some people on Twitter saying that they had taken several tries to get their recording under a minute. And I just think that, like, thank you. The thing I know about our listeners, Katie, maybe you know this, they follow the fucking rules.
That's right.
This is something that I know, I cherish about all of you. You follow the fucking rules. And yeah, we just appreciate it. Maybe let's get into some of the cool stuff that we've done. Katie, I would love for you to maybe tell me about what one of your favorite episodes to record was.
Well, I had my first episode was incredibly memorable because it was with the iconic Adrian Barbeau. So
Oh my God, that's right.
Am I stepping into your very large shoes, not to say that you have big feet, but, you know, I was like stepping into this role as, you know, I was nervous. I had seen you record an episode and saw how good you were. And I was just like, oh my God, I hope I can do this. And then I was interviewing, I mean, a literal icon. And I just was so nervous. I was definitely very nervous, but she was so sweet. She was one of the loveliest people. We had a really fun time chatting. And, you know, I had to like kind of get my sea legs, but she was really nice. And that couldn't have been a better like first episode because she was just such an icon. So it was like it was a great choice. And, but one of my favorite episodes to record, I mean, I've been lucky to like have some good friends who are filmmakers who have been on, but I loved talking to Clark Wolf about Scream because she and I were just like locked in. We were so simpatico on it. And I had known Clark, before, and it was just so fun to like get to do this podcast with her because we were just like really vibing. And that's one of my favorite episodes is the Scream episode.
Can I say something about the Adrian Barbeau episode?
Yeah, you should, Casey.
So she was awesome. She was just a wonderful guest and just a sweet person. Sometimes with guests, I mean, all of our guests are so lovely, but there's a little bit of a, you know, nervousness before they get on the show. Like, what's this person going to be like? And all of our guests were just wonderful. But Adrian is the only guest that ever called my home cell phone before recording because she was just to ask about the show and just to kind of like figure out how the show would go. And I remember I was like, what number is this? And I picked up the phone and she was like, hi, Casey, this is Adrian Barbeau. And it was just a very surreal and
like
strange
a radio
and,
voice in the fog or something.
Yes, exactly.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was exactly like that.
Hi, mateys. This is KAB Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea.
And we talked for like 15 minutes, and I was just walking around my apartment talking to Adrian Barbeau about Switchblade Sisters. And that was a very memorable moment for me as well.
Oh, she's the best.
What about you, April?
I gotta say, actually, one that really sticks in my mind, it's like the first one that comes to mind, is Lily Marié's Truly Madly Deeply episode. It's not what you would consider to be like a genre movie that we would kind of normally cover because it's so much of essentially a romantic drama that is also involving ghosts and Alan Rickman. But it was I felt like we were geeking out over the craft of filmmaking and about being kind of like early filmmakers and just being excited about the things that you can find while you're making a film, like the techniques that you stumble upon, like the weird ways that you try to make your day. Like, I just felt like we were kind of like vibing on a different level. And that's a really tough thing to do sometimes, especially because that was an early one when we were recording on Zoom. And so we were still trying to get our footing of, you know, like I'm looking at you, you're not in the studio. And it's just sometimes there's like internet issues and things. And I just felt like she was one of those directors where you're just like, this is maybe a person who doesn't have a brand name as a writer director, Lily Marier, but she is a legend in her own right after, you know, being on what, like 15 seasons of ER and then directing ER, which is like, if you've ever seen that show, you know that the directing of it is like epic, and then going on and doing her own things. And it's just like finding those creators that people maybe haven't heard of who have this very special talent and craft and bringing them to other people. I just, that is, it's such a high for me. It's such a high.
I loved what Lily said on, that was a wonderful interview too. I just, she was just like a balm on the rash of our national situation going on. She was just wonderful on the show. And she, oddly enough, is the only guest who Facebook friended me and messaged me on Facebook prior to the interview. So you guys have brought up two interviews.
Did you set where this up so that you would
I didn't
just set, nice conversational set buttons about these?
But love Lily. Lots of love for Lily. She's great.
Yeah, I'm a very big fan. Drea, besides your own episode, did you have any favorites of ones that you were listening to?
I just want to say before Drea, I'm talking way too much on Switchblade Sisters. I shouldn't even be talking at all, but I'm just excited to be here. Drea did so much behind the scenes work of getting guests for the show. There are so many guests that are on Switchblade Sisters because of Drea.
Yeah.
I still have, and I will never be able to get rid of it, a page in my notes on my phone that is just Switchblade Sisters ? And it's lists of filmmakers that I know or that are coming out. And I'm so sad I won't be able to introduce them, but I've loved, both the people that I did know and then the people I didn't. The element to me, I like that you guys both, Katie also mentioned this, that those times when people like lock into a conversation, because this show is so impressive in so many ways in terms of like April's research and the writing of it, and you find connective threads like those. So one of the people that I introduced you to is my friend Erica Yancey, who's an incredible documentary producer.
Erica's the best. I
right?
love her.
And she works on like, she's done tons of some really solemn, like she did a Hurricane Katrina and 9/11, like these really dark things. And the movie that she picked was Matilda. And I was like, all right, let's see you work now, April Wolf. And then I listened to it and I was like, How dare she find all these little nooks and crannies of connective elements between freaking Matilda and like dark documentary work? And those are the things on top of when I can feel like, you know, you vibing with the guest. I'm always like, you'll put in little non sequiturs or you'll tie things together in ways that make them so memorable. And I remember listening to the Matilda one, and every single bit that you brought up, I was like, oh, no, she didn't. What? It was so good.
Oh, thanks, Drea. One that I wanted to bring up too is something to toot our show's own horn is the fact that someone like Tyresha Poe and Issa Lopez, people who chose, Issa chose Pan's Labyrinth, Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth. She was essentially the first guest who recorded with us. Tyresha Poe chose Rian Johnson's Brick. They're people who emulated those filmmakers. And then when the show aired, both of those filmmakers were able to connect with Issa.
Oh, and wow.
So now Issa's being produced by Guillermo del Toro. And it's like, and Tyresha Poe got like these big props and got to meet Rian Johnson and talk to him. And I just, I think that's something too that I really, really appreciate about what we've been able to do in terms of kind of connecting guests who may not have a household name to larger areas of filmmaking and producing. And I think that that's just something that I will always be proud of.
And then you could
can
have
we
seen
talk
coming.
About Sophia? And you?
Oh, true.
I mean, it's worked for the host as well.
I know, right?
That's how you met Sophia,
not
right?
Not only the president of the Hair Club for Men, I'm also
a member. But that's how you and Sophia connected before you made Black Christmas, right?
Yeah. And that's it's a funny thing. I've had to say that in so many interviews for Black Christmas, is like getting that job because we hit it off in a weird way on the episode that we recorded. And that's the kind of thing that we find with the guests that we've had on the show, with having so many women on there. Like, they really truly want to connect. Like, there's not really a standoffishness, is something that I get about our guests. There's a desire and need for community and a want to connect with others. And I just really, really appreciate that.
I think this would be a great time to play a call.
Let's do it.
Hi, Swiss Plate Sisters. It's Emily Gagne here from Toronto. I'm so sad to see this incredible show go. As a lifelong horror fan and new filmmaker myself, this show has been quite an inspiration. I so often find myself in horror spaces filled with straight white men who assume that I know less than them about the genre. So listening to April talk to women who not only love, but are making genre film, has made me feel less alone. I felt a similar way when I watched April and Sophia's remake of Black Christmas, so I'm really thrilled to hear that there's more where that came from to come. I often dreamed of the day I might get to be on Switchblade Sisters as a filmmaker myself, hoping that I would get to talk about Halloween, 1978, of course, Laurie Strode, and the underappreciated Deborah Hill. I will just have to keep looking for fellow Switchblade Sisters to continue that conversation with. Thanks again, everyone at Switchblade Sisters. I really love the show, and I really appreciate everything that you did for women in film.
Oh, Emily. Oh. It's the calls like that that are like, okay, I won't quit. I'll keep doing the show. That was so sweet. And Emily's not alone. We've had a lot of people reach out to us who felt like they were the only kind of marginalized person in their crews who watched horror. And so they felt really alone, like they didn't have anyone else to connect with. We met with a friend of the show, Akie. Akie is really wonderful. If you're listening now, you know, we got to hang out with her at Fantastic Fest and make some friends. And she was a longtime listener. And also Blair down in Georgia. She became a little bit of a pen pal of mine. She's a really wonderful person also who reached out about that. Again, there's so much opportunity for community around this show. It hurts my heart that might be going away for some people, but what I can only hope and assume is that there will be something that fills that void, because it's necessary and because people need something to kind of connect around in that.
You're not alone, Emily. We're here with you.
You're not alone.
It's funny how she mentioned that, like, people thought she wasn't an expert. And I love that this space has kind of, or not an expert, but didn't know what she was talking about. And
yeah,
I love that this space has kind of given, you know, you have given female filmmakers and anybody who's been able to talk on the show about, you know, us to talk about genre from a place of authority and not, and a place of fandom and a place of love for the genre, but like not to have anyone like undermine that, you know, which is, yeah. I feel sometimes happens like kind of gatekeeping, and like this is like the opposite of that.
I think tied in with that is also, beyond talking about genre specifically, just listening to artists talk about filmmaking, talk about something that they're passionate and knowledgeable about. And I know for me, like I said, for any of the friends that I had maybe introduced you to or talked into, one of the first things I would explain is, I can promise you, April Wolf will not ask you, what's it like to be a woman in filmmaking? And it's a small thing, but it's huge. Like, you brought on guests who talked about their craft and their interest and their passions. And there might have been I've said connective thread in two things now. I just like,
hell yeah.
That's my connective thread. But yeah, there might have been something more tying them to it. But it was really, oh, someone wants to talk to me about what I think about another movie and also how I make things myself. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's a thing that Casey and I ran into quite a bit, where people would be really kind of apprehensive when they would come into the studio or start recording for it with us, because they were like not quite sure what exactly was happening. And but the thing is, they were worried that they didn't know enough. These are people who are working in Hollywood who are afraid that they don't know enough to talk about things. And then so my favorite thing when we finish recording is that someone says, that was really fun and easy. And I appreciate that. We just had a recent episode where Mary Holland, we talked about the game. And I remember like afterwards, she was just like, oh, that was so fun. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't have to be like a pop quiz of like, what's your knowledge? It's just like, share what you're passionate about. Katie, you had an experience where you're, was it Allison Anders?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I interviewed Allison Anders for the podcast. I had never met her before. We had talked on the phone for something, but we had never met before. We really vibed. That was another really memorable one where we totally just fell in love with each other while recording the podcast, and we're like Instagram friends now. And I'm like, oh my God, Allison's my friend, kind of. Today, I'm so excited to have filmmaker Allison Anders here in the studio. Allison, welcome to Switchblade Sisters.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I'm so excited to
Yay,
be here.
This is going to be a super fun conversation.
Can't wait.
She's a legend. You know, she Gas Food Lodging, like Mi Vida Loca, all these films, like she's done so many things. And we were walking to the parking garage after the podcast and talking about how much fun we had talking to each other. And she, this legendary filmmaker, she says, that's the very first interview where someone hasn't asked me about being a woman filmmaker. Like no one said the W word. And I'm like, are you serious? Allison Anders has been doing press for 30 years or more. Like, mm-hmm. And this is the very first time we just talked about movies and the movie that she loves and her films and filmmaking, and we didn't talk about her gender at all. And that blew my mind, totally.
I think that, you know, it's worth mentioning that earlier in the show, when we first started doing it, I used to write out questions that I would have for people. I would have like quotes, and then I would have questions, like potential questions that I would ask after that quote. And then at some point I stopped doing it because I was just like, I actually don't like any of these questions because they don't arrive in the moment. And so I ended up changing the whole kind of format of how I did it. I didn't write out any of my questions beforehand. I only had the quotes and assumed that those talking points would get us to a place where we would be able to interrogate things in a more off-the-cuff manner. And I'm not like, sure how Katie did it, but
do you mean like quotes from process. The films?
No, quotes from filmmakers. Like I would just go okay. through, you know, obviously Secret Weapon is just like going through like very kind of deep targeted research online. But I watched a lot of commentaries. I read a lot of like behind the scenes things. And I would just kind of, sometimes I would copy paste. Sometimes I would kind of like paraphrase or add a bunch of, like put together a bunch of quotes from different sources into like a single one that all kind of felt like they were together. And then usually scripts ended up being between 12 and like 18 pages, depending on what the movie is. And sometimes I would do them up to 18 pages just because I wanted to have that information handy for myself. Because I was so enjoying the process that I'm like, I return back sometimes to quotes to be like, oh, that was really interesting in terms of technique. I want to remember what that was.
Well, I remember the first time you were like, here's an example of a script I write. And I was just like, oh my God, this is 20 pages long. I can't believe this. I was like astonished at how much research you had put into it.
How many hours per episode would you say, April?
Well, it depends on if it's an obscure one. I never wanted to kind of tell people that they couldn't do obscure ones. Some of the things that you have when you have filmmakers coming on the show is that they want to try to flaunt their knowledge or convince people that they might have, you know, like a deeper knowledge of something. So they might change, like they might pick something obscure as a way to connect with like some weirdos out there. Kelly Reichardt picking the most obscure film that we've ever had. That research for that took me a good 3-4 days, almost a week.
What was her film?
Mise en Scène, or Pillaged, the English title. A film that is only available by a YouTube link somewhere.
Always a good sign. Yep. Yeah.
There's a limited screenings in France since 1975. But yeah.
That was funny too, because she was the most upset that you were spoiling the ending of that movie that we've ever had for any other guest.
I was like, Kelly, nobody's going to fucking see this.
Don't tell the end.
No, I have to.
No, don't
our
tell
whole,
the end.
Our whole thing is telling the end.
Oh, really? Don't tell the end.
It's okay. It's okay. Edgar finds an entrance into the Martins' home and stops answering his walkie-talkie. And George has to retrieve him, but finds him dumping gasoline all over the house and tries to restrain him.
Why are you telling?
Because it's the whole point of the show.
No, but the end doesn't... It's not called the end, your
no,
show.
No, I... my listeners expect it, so it's okay. They go in knowing that they're going to get spoiled. But
this is a good. It's really a good ending to come to.
I know, but we have to talk about the ending in the show.
No, we don't. We talk
yes,
about
we
all
do.
The other things,
Kelly. We have to. But Edgar, hold on. I swear, it's going to be okay. Edgar succeeds in igniting the house.
Oh.
George escapes. Like, I really got to convince people to go and see this movie. So just give me a second. God, I love her.
Should we play another message?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, April. It's Jade Yankowski. And I just wanted to say that your podcast, Switchblade Sisters, has been such an amazing source of films for me to discover and directors to discover their work. I myself am an aspiring writer and actress, and if I were to ever be on your podcast, it would have been with the film Martin by George A. Romero. So yeah, it's your podcast and the people that you brought in, all the women, meant so much to me, and I'm going to miss it so much, but I can't wait to see what you do next. Bye.
Oh.
I think if you ever do an after-the-fact Switchblade Sisters convention, everyone should need to wear on their name tag, underneath it would be the name of the movie they would have picked if they had been a guest on Switchblade Sisters. I think it's such a good question.
It's a question that we asked because there were many times on Twitter where people were just kind of organically saying what movie they want to pick. People would be like, oh, I can't wait until I direct a feature so that I can go on the show. And I was just like, do it quick.
Someone recently said they were like, oh, I'm waiting for Switchblade Sisters to do Phantom of the Paradise, the De Palma film. And I was like, standing by. I volunteer as tribute. Phantom of the Paradise.
That would have been the perfect one.
We're going to get like a Winnipeg filmmaker somewhere doing that.
So one of the things, I do have a question about picking movies, because I know, I'm thinking, like, did you ask people if they had a couple examples? And there's also, one of the things I love about it is how that it's genre, but it's also action, it's adventure, it's basically a lot of films that are not immediately thought of as female friendly, was my sort of subtitle of the movies you took on. And were there ever times in describing, like, what we'd love for you to pick a genre film, and then having that be a, like, oh, a deeper conversation of what kind of films we mean? Or did people come locked and loaded with, like, I'd like to talk about one of these four movies?
I mean, it's a combination. I mean, for people who want to know the process too, Casey was doing, I think in the earlier part, I was doing bookings with him more, and then he kind of took over that predominantly. And so he has to talk to the reps of all of these filmmakers who have to talk to the filmmakers who have to talk to the going back and forth. And so it's like, it's better for him to be extremely clear about what kind of films we mean, so that it's like, there's not a misconnection in going back to the filmmakers. But that, as Casey can attest, it doesn't mean that people didn't interpret genre in a different way.
Yeah. I think people didn't unless you know genre cinema, you don't know it at all.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people had, particularly like publicists, had a hard time conveying to their clients that we were like, we want to talk about genre movies. So I had to basically be like, it needs to be horror, sci-fi, action, fantasy. That's it. And
crime, we would allow.
Crime. I don't even think I put that in there because it would...
It complicates things.
So
I do have to say one of my favorite episodes was one that made me sweat a little bit. Casey wasn't there for it. He was out. And so we had, I think Jordan Cowling was filling in for you at this one. Jessica Hausner, our guest.
Wait,
Jessica
can you hold that real quick? I actually have a message about that. And it's the next message. Can I play that real quick?
Yeah.
Howdy, this is Abby from St. Louis. I can't express how grateful I am for Switchblade Sisters. I've been listening from the very beginning, and I've seen so many great movies because of April and Co's fascinating breakdowns and wonderful guests. Cam, First Cow, Blow the Man Down, Tigers Are Not Afraid, probably a dozen more. My fave episodes are The Game with Mary Holland because I watched it a day before the episode came out. Lucky me that I avoided spoilers. And The Visit with Jessica Hauser. It was so interesting listening to a conversation that managed to be so candid and honest, brutally honest at some points, and full of insight, even when the guest hadn't seen the film. The show fills me with so much pride, joy, and fun facts to bother my fiance with. Thank you again for everything. I wish everybody the best with wherever you go next.
Oh, Abby, thank you. I am a little bit proud of that episode in terms of like how we were able. Jessica Hausner, to quote, had not seen all the way through. She did not see the ending of the movie that she chose, which she chose M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit. And
the good thing about his movies is the ending always matches the beginning.
Yeah.
And there's
never
rarely
anything to anticipate, you know, just goes right through.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, as everyone who listens to the show knows, that we really don't care about spoilers. We give you a little bit of a warning, but that's, you know, our motto is that it doesn't really matter. And it was a really tough thing to have to be like, okay, Jessica, I'm going to have to tell you the end of this movie. And then to hear her be like audibly disappointed in it. And then
yeah, she was like, oh, I wouldn't have finished it that way.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that now that you spoiled the story and you told me how it ends, like, I really have to say I stopped the film in the right moment, because that is what was really open to me. I thought, what is the answer to all those strange things happening? So, and I have to admit, this happens to me in a lot of genre films. The first half is very interesting very often, because you have all those questions. You think, what is this going to be about? Why is the grandmother behaving so strangely? What are those diapers about? But then when you give me the answer, I find it extremely simple. This is not really, I don't know, this is not enlightening my experience of life at all.
And I just I gotta say, that's one of my faves.
It's so good. Because I was getting all these like emergency text messages from April, and also it was our fellow Melissa who actually
had.
She was the only episode she ever produced, I think. And I just happened to not be there for some reason. I was getting all these messages from her and April, like, it's a disaster. She didn't watch the movie, which was always like my concern as a producer, that like we picked, they wanted to do a different movie than they actually said, or they were like, there was confusion some way. It's a great conversation, though. It's a great, and the episode turned out wonderfully, I thought.
Did you ever have any guests, or what are the standout ones for you in terms of films that people picked that totally surprised you? Either because, even if it was like, oh, not because it was so obscure, it could be something like a very cool indie person who was like, I want to do this very broadly known film. Like, was there anything that just stood out to you?
Fuck.
Oh my God, I stumped April Wolf. Casey, you owe me $20.
One of the things I really loved, I wasn't sure what Alice Lowe was going to pick. And then she went with The Company of Wolves. And I was just like, oh, I thought we were going to go with something kind of gory. Because Alice, if you know her, she's a little bit gothy. And she is, very kind of into like a traditional horror. And so I was just like, of course she's going to pick some kind of traditional horror. But then when she did The Company of Wolves, I was just like, this is a kind of a little bit deeper, more misunderstood cut of genre films. And I thought that was a really lovely one for her to have picked.
I would say recently, I mean, maybe it's not that big of a surprise, but when Kirsten Johnson picked Jackass, that was like, I was like, oh, wow, like just really a unique choice. But it also fits perfectly with her movie.
That was so great about that episode, because you read the description, the person, you know, the guest, the title, and you're just like, how are they going to make this work? And then it's so beautifully done. And I also love those moments when I would be doing the hosting the podcast, and the guest would go, wow, I didn't really think that this movie connected to my movie at all. And I'd be like, well, these are the themes, and these are the things that I deduce that I'm the connective threads, if you will.
The connective threads.
The connective threads.
Yes, we like to call them the beer. Yeah.
Like when the guest at the end of the episode would be like, wait, what? I guess this really did influence me. That was always really fun. Yeah. But yeah, but the Jackass episode, I mean, you just look at the title and you're like, this is going to be good.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to keep hitting on that one. It is such a recent episode. But again, it's just like if it feels like a kind of culmination of everything that we've been trying to do on Switchblade.
I had two others that surprised me. We kind of knew Bria Grant because she had a show on Max Fun, but she picked Basket Case, which is like such a goofy 80s horror, and everyone was kind of picking these like prestige horror picks, or like it seems like that was a lot of guests were picking that, and so that was really fun to pick just such a ridiculous
elevated
horror movie.
People were picking a lot of elevated horror.
Exactly, thank you. Yes, that's the correct term.
Oh, I loved when Essie Davis picked The Vanishing, because mm-hmm. The Vanishing is just this devastating fucking movie.
Yeah.
And then she the whole time was just like, oh God, I'm like, I hate it. And I was just like she was just squirming the whole time she was talking about it.
Casey, what was your second surprise pick?
Oh yeah. Amy Simetz picking The Peanut Butter Solution, which is this random, like, made-for-TV Canadian bizarro movie. And because she, you know, she has done The Girlfriend Experience. She had a kind of more artsier type movie. So you don't know what she's going to pick. And she picked just this very strange movie. And we had so many Canadians tweeting about that episode because oh my God, people are finally talking about this movie.
I love that episode. And I love that, April, you're just like, this is the wackiest movie I've ever seen.
it was a nightmare that I remember from being a kid. Oh, another one, when Mary Lambert picked Hereditary. It's just cool when you see a classic fucking primo horror director who picks someone new to talk about, kind of like the new generation. I really appreciated that.
This one of the artists that I didn't know, Caroline Williams, before, she's the Office and Maniac writer, and she picked Picnic at Hanging Rock, which I was like, oh, they're gonna finally do it. Like, I was like, that seems like such a Switchblade choice, and I was so excited. And she had such a different angle in, because she came from like TV with comedy, eccentric and like weirdo comedy, but that was I dug that pairing. That surprised me.
Oh yeah, Caroline is one of those people too where I had met her outside of Switchblade, and I invited her on the show. We have a mutual friend, and I invited her on the show because she wanted to write genre movies, but she was just like, oh no, nobody thinks I can do it. And I was just like, why not? Why the fuck can't you? So I brought her on so that she could talk about genre movies. And it's just like the more confidence that you get about talking about it in public, you know, like it translates, I think, into the work that you create, that you have that ability to do it. Casey, do you have any more phone calls that you want to play?
Yes, we have lots of phone calls. Let's go to our next one.
Hi, Switchblade Sisters. This is Daisy Von Furler-Mayer. I'm calling to wish April bon voyage and happy trails wherever she goes. I want to thank her for elevating women directors and elevating genres. That was one of the great things about the show, was how we got to delve really in depth in different genres and different directors. I got to talk about all that jazz forever, which is just my happy place. And anyway, I'm rambling, but cheers. Go get them. Bye.
Daisy is a fucking queen, first off. I mean, it's so cool. Like, in the past couple of years since Party Girl's been streaming, and you've you know, kind of seeing people turned on to her early work and just being like, oh, holy shit. Like, where did this come from? So getting to talk to her about all that jazz, where we kind of stretched a little bit what we're talking about with genre, but it's just like such a great fucking movie. And you could tell that she loved it. We're just like, we have to let her talk about this. Like, let's just get into it. And luckily there was so much film craft to get into with that movie that was able to kind of springboard into these discussions about her process. But it, oh God, I love Daisy. What a
Party Girl is such an influence on me. It was a huge, huge, hugely important film for me as a teenager. Hell yeah.
Well, when she was on, Party Girl wasn't even available for streaming anywhere. No. And I think it is now. I think it's on Prime, perhaps. But it is streaming. You can rent it now, at least. So, yeah, I'm glad she's getting her due after being on our show, as a result of being on our show, probably.
Fully. Oh, yeah.
Obviously. And I feel that same way about Nia DaCosta. Very clearly, when we had her on to talk about Alien, when her film Littlewoods came out, I was like, oh, I think this is the little push that she's going to get over into big time.
you're probably going to get back end on... on the remake, so you're golden forever because of that.
Awesome. It's perfect.
Hey kid. Your dad tell you about the time he broke Steven Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah!
I would love to share something that, I mean, if you listen to that episode on what we do in the shadows, you learned that I got to invite my first grade best friend onto the show, Katie Tibaldi. This is one of my favorite things that film Twitter has done for me and the show, is the fact that I had a best friend in school, my only friend in school when I was in first grade. And I was just like I came out of kindergarten, I met her, and I was just like, holy shit, maybe I won't have no friends for the rest of my life. And then she moved away. I got her for one school year. She moved away, but I had so few friends in my childhood years that I remembered her name so deeply. And it's just like, who has that name? And then film Twitter came along and Switchblade Sisters, we were posting episodes and she responded to something. And I was just like, hey, were you my first grade best friend?
No!
And she was. And, you know, she's a comedy writer, producer. She is writing and producing on At Home with Amy Sedaris. She's in New York and she's done a bunch of other stuff. But she got to come on the show. We got to reunite, you know, 30 some years later to talk about what we do in the shadows and work in the same field. And
that is the coolest story. Also, you probably have credit for her career as well, because I'm sure it was your very young influence that put her on that road. I like to imagine a young April Wolf awkwardly just interrogating her single friend about why she likes a movie so much.
Oh my God. Never had a friend after that.
Stop it.
April.
You're killing me.
April, do you want to talk about... do you want to talk about how this show got created at the beginning and like what was the impetus?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think it'd be interesting to discuss.
I was at LA Weekly at the time. I was feeling really frustrated. I was not being given the leeway to do the things that I wanted to do for the film section at LA Weekly because budget, time, my editors were in New York, everything was just kind of splintered. And then there was like a sale on the horizon and I was just like, I need to think about my future. And I was getting to the point too where there were so many people who were on Twitter. And this is like when I first started like interacting on Twitter because I had to when I got the LA Weekly job. And they were like, ooh, name a female filmmaker. And there was just like one one. Like people only like could only name one. And I was just like, you know, 2015, like, what the fuck? Like, really? Like, this is where we're at right now. And so I was like, okay, well, how can we do this to make female filmmakers' names resonate with other people? Because that's the thing. Like, they might hear them and they'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, they did this one movie. But, like, how do you get it to stick in their head? How do you get it to be, like, off the cuff where they can just name it when they're at a party? And, you know, that's how you create your Martin Scorsese's, you know? Like, that's how you create your, like, Wes Anderson's. Like, has to be someone who they remember. They have that thing and that sparks. And so for me, I was like, okay, well, if they're not well-known, what if they talk about something else that's well-known? What if they attach their aesthetic sensibility to something else? And we can say like, oh, I remember that episode because I remember that person. They were talking about a movie that I love. And so trying to find a way to make these kind of like cerebral connections that would allow people to kind of have that recall, a total recall you might have of memory for female filmmakers. And so then that was kind of the genesis of the show. And I did a pilot episode. It all came kind of fully formed, even though it's a kind of a complicated, I guess, idea for a show. So I did one pilot. Suki Samakis did the episode with me along with Winter Mitchell. My friend Chris Hatfield produced it for us. And we presented it to Max Fun. And then we did a couple pilot episodes with Casey as my producer. And it kind of went from there. It came together pretty fast, I think, how the show was going to come off. There's like some tweaking and things, as we talked about before, like how the script would come out or segments and things. But it was pretty fully formed from the beginning. And it's just nice that people were talking about genre stuff too. I mean, like so many of the callers that we've had said, that it's kind of isolating when you feel like you're the only marginalized person who likes something, and that there are gatekeepers who are telling you that you can't like it. I, of course, went the academic route with how I did it, you know, with like lots of research, because something that I realized when I was writing for LA Weekly was you can be a great writer, but if you don't put in the work and you don't show your knowledge, people don't actually appreciate it for very long. What people really appreciate is going the extra mile, making the call, looking something up, doing that thing. Like, that's how you separate yourself out as a writer, I think. And so by doing that research and kind of showing us as experts, it's like, okay, we want to be the destination for this kind of knowledge. And people love to learn things. I love to learn things. And hopefully me learning things and getting excited about that excites other people as well. So
I think there's so much to be said for, I guess I would call it a connective thread of, it would be, yes, thank you, Katie.
That's
it would
really
be a connective
wow.
thread. Yeah. Mm, yeah. No, of, you know, movies are things that bring people together in really interesting ways. And a lot of it is if you have a shared passion. It's if you're ever, I mean, all of us, I'm sure, if you're stuck in a room of like, oh, stranger small talk, I will absolutely ask you what your favorite movie from childhood was. Like, there's sure. something there that is just, it's an immediate icebreaker. And it's also an immediate insight to people of what they're interested in, how they express themselves through what mm-hmm. they like. And Switchblade Sisters being targeted on like genre films already gives you like, come over here, get in our little cave with us, we're hiding out from the rain and making friends. And there's something so lovely in that, just of the connective thread of it, of what people are passionate about, but how that unlocks both for the guests and what you're finding there, but also clearly from the people who've been calling in and who are listening and who either are recognizing kindred spirits in you and the people you're talking to and the other people in the Switchblade Sisters larger family.
Yeah.
But also just in the idea of the world in general of, oh, there's more of me out there, and these are things they like, and aren't those all positive bubbles of happiness coming into my world, especially when those positive bubbles of happiness are filled with, you know, gore and body horror and weird dismemberment. I mean, it's really just a bonus.
The thing about asking someone what their favorite genre film is, and also the blend of sort of like fandom and academics that this podcast gets at, it's like a very unique tone. But like asking someone what their favorite genre film is, it's like not what what's not not what's your favorite movie, because then especially a filmmaker is going to want to say something very prestige-y, something very like high art. And it's like, no, we already have talked about all of those movies. Let's talk about The Peanut Butter Solution. You know, let's talk about Point Break. Let's talk about Alien. You know, these are like things that it allows you to have like an enthusiasm for it. And like, that's what I have always enjoyed about doing the show is like, let's be fun and like be a fan of this thing and like, you know, just talk about it being crazy. And also let's like dig into filmmaking and like the behind the scenes of this process and like the connections between, you know, that their film and the film. So it just like, it's such a unique tone that I feel like hasn't necessarily been captured in other podcasts.
I think the fan thing is important. I'd just like to say from the outside, April and Katie, like it is very clear you two love these movies as well. You love talking about them. You love the history of them. You know them well. And that makes a big difference because it's less of a cursory, oh, I had an intern put together a note card for me with the bullet points from the trailer. And instead, people who are thrown themselves in and have watched every slasher or every sci-fi underwater, you know, if you have this frame of reference and you're genuinely psyched, that comes across when you guys are talking to people. So gold stars for you, ladies.
Well, there's something too that I should mention, and that's the fact that there's a lot of people who assume that women, people of color, marginalized filmmakers, that they don't actually know what they're doing, that they kind of stumble into things, that there's that they don't have a process or they don't have a craft, and so they don't have an intention behind their filmmaking. So you get in reviews, like people, especially if you do something weird with tone or weird with story, people assume it's a mistake. They don't think that you are purposely experimenting, for instance. So then you get people like Ava DuVernay, who you know, will get an award or nominated for an award. And then you get a bunch of these weird fucking people who are just like, who've never seen any of her movies, who are just like, you're just giving it to her because she's a black woman. And like, the thing is, if you actually engage with her work, there's craft there. There is deep process there. We're doing a disservice to a lot of marginalized filmmakers when we're not asking them like how they're doing things. And I think that that's something that I hope that people understand. There's a lot of movies that we talk about that, not a lot. There's a few movies that I haven't really enjoyed that people pick. And then I love them more when I learn about how they were made. And that's hopefully something that I hope goes for the goodwill towards the women filmmakers that we've had. Even if you didn't like their movie, maybe you've listened to them talk about it in detail about why they did something, about how they did something. And perhaps you appreciate it more because of that. Do you have any more calls?
Yes, I do. This next one is a little sad. And it's about Lynn Shelton. Is that okay if I play it?
Yeah, that's great. I'm ready to cry.
Hi there. My name is Dylan Sanford, longtime listener of the show. Some years back, I was the DP on a Marc Maron comedy special that Lynn Shelton directed. And we became fast friends and would share whatever we were working on whenever we'd catch up. So a little after that show, I'd pitched her on a sci-fi script I was working on. She loved it and joked she should direct it. And then she said that she wasn't much of a sci-fi fan, but there was one movie that she liked for its humanity, Code 46, which I'd actually never heard of. So she excitedly explained it to me. And right after, she went on Switchblade Sisters and picked Code 46 to discuss, maybe because it was on her mind after we talked. So I finally watched the movie so that I could listen to that episode spoiler free. And the funny thing was I didn't really love it. But you know, now it's almost a year since Lynn died, and this year has been so strange, and I feel like none of us have been able to grieve properly, and we've all lost so much. So someday maybe I'll get up the nerve to listen to that episode again, but I'm grateful we have that record. Maybe I'll even come around to Code 46. I don't know. Anyway, I'll miss Switchblade and I'll miss Lynn. And thanks for all you did bringing passionate artists to talk about the objects of their affection. Thanks.
Yeah, I feel very privileged that we got to have Lynn on the show and sharing this thing with us. A movie that I didn't even know about, but, you know, that illuminates kind of who she was as a filmmaker and why she is so mourned in the community.
Lynn was definitely someone who texted me after she did it and said, "That was so much easier than I thought." Oh. I'm so glad. That was so fun.
Oh, my God. And she went on to become a really big champion of the show in the way that she was for so many other people and so many other, you know, projects. And, you know, we're always grateful. We'll always be grateful for that. Do you have any other ones? Do you have a happy
one? I do, yes.
Keep playing.
All right.
Hi, it's Bria Grant. Just wanting to wish April good luck in all that she does. Switchblade Sisters is obviously such an amazing podcast, and we're all just very grateful for her shining a spotlight on female filmmakers and all the things that made us who we are. Good luck, April, and I'm excited to see what you do next.
I love Bria. Bria obviously is well known in many ways. I met her years ago when I programmed the first film she directed at Slam Dance, and I loved her episode, but something else that reminded me of, there are not a lot of great podcasts just about filmmakers talking craft, full stop. I mean, even without the other brackets of, you know, integrating like their favorite genre film or specifying that it's female filmmakers, there's something about just having a place to turn to for aspiring filmmakers. And several people who've called in have mentioned that of they are people who are making things themselves. And I think it will be fascinating as things move ahead and the community hopefully continues on of what listening to these episodes unlock in creatives in terms of how they approach things. Maybe they learn something about breaking down scenes or looking at characters or, you know, juggling production, whatever it is. I think there's a real sort of craft discussion that happens here that doesn't happen in a lot of places. You guys, I may look ageless and like an infant all at
she
once.
She really does. She really does. Glistening skin. Yes. Beautiful.
But with that, we did not have podcasts when I was like in college or anything. And so I really like the idea of this existing and people being able to still discover Switchblade Sisters and glean things from it, both of films they can find to be psyched about and maybe they're filmmakers themselves and learn something about how to approach things as a director.
Yeah. I mean, it's hopefully demystifying the process. We like to call this as like little mini master classes, essentially. You know, those are the episodes I think that often work best for me, the ones where we can kind of dig into those and that feel like they're evergreen and feel like people can kind of like return to them no matter what, because they might be able to get to learn something about Martha Coolidge's episode, for instance, felt like a master class. Deborah Granick talking about Pick Up on South Street. You know, like there are people who have so much knowledge to imbue that on the audience that it's, you know, hopefully it keeps getting found.
I think the Bria Grant episode is interesting too, because she was on the show twice. She's one of only two guests who was on the show twice. And yeah. She was on, it's kind of interesting. She was on early on with Switchblade Sisters, and I'm blanking on Best Friends Forever, I think
that
was her.
That was the film I programmed.
She co-directed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's just interesting to see where she was from there, kind of the beginning of her directing career, to even just like a few years later, how much more success she's found and like how her career has progressed. And yeah. Those are two kind of interesting episodes to listen next to each other, because you can get more of a full arc of a career in just a few years.
Yep. Yeah. And her movie 12 Hour Shift right now is on Hulu. You can watch it, and it's just so funny and so wonderful. Exactly has her sensibility represented too. One of the things that I love about her though is that she is a person who kind of embodies the independent filmmaking spirit. And so she chose two movies that are kind of like quintessentially, you know, like independent when she talked about May and Basket Case. And so she was talking about specifically like her style of filmmaking, the kind of like scrappy stuff that she had to do to kind of pull her movies together. And I just, not talking about only big budget things all the time, but just like, here's something that like they had very minimal resources and they made it work and it became beloved.
I almost did a Bria Grant episode because I did Natasha Kermani's Lucky, which Bria wrote stars in.
Yep.
So she's like a 2.5 episoder kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's like a thread that got connected into that with you.
Oh my
Katie.
God. It's
That's interesting.
Connected.
It's a, yeah.
Elaborate on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's subtle. I'll probably never bring it up again.
More calls.
Hi, my name is Lacey, and I just wanted to say how much I've loved the show, especially just hearing from female filmmakers talking about what has influenced them, especially in the case of people that like the Repulsion episode. You know, I think you all handled that conversation so well about being influenced by Roman Polanski, but also, you know, how hard it is to reckon with who he is as a person. You know, that's a struggle for, I think, a lot of people now, just coming to terms with, oh, hey, this person that really influenced me is trash, and this person that a lot of people who revere is trash. So I've really appreciated those conversations and, just the breadth of, films that you all have covered. I'm really gonna miss you guys. And, if there was one movie I would have talked about if I had been a guest on your show, it would have been Clash of the Titans. Okay, thanks so much.
Oh, Clash of the Titans would have been a good one.
Katie physically cheered.
I gotta say, so Katie did Repulsion and I did Rosemary's Baby, those episodes. Something that Casey will attest to as well is that everyone, you know, this is like women, like, were needed to do Roman Polanski. So many people were like, can I do this movie? Can I do Roman Polanski? Like, I feel like we are primed and okay to talk about these things and to kind of like work through our feelings about them in a an interesting way. But is it Jessie Nixon Lopez who did?
Yes.
She's a very early episode on for us too. She did Rosemary's Baby. So she, you know, plucked it out. No one else could have it. And I thought it was a really lovely thing where I think she was at the ready to say that it's not all great. That's something that can be so influential on your life can also be like,
Rosemary's Baby explores psychosis, religion, motherhood, misogyny, patriarchy, the medical system, etc. And because I think that we need to address this up front, it's a film made by a man who's serially abused and assaulted girls in real life. So, Jesse, before we get into anything else, can we just wrap our brains quickly around what it means to love but abhor a film and its filmmaker?
I mean, can we wrap our brains around that?
I know, this is a long discussion, right?
You know, I feel like I've been trying to do that ever since I learned about the terrible things that Roman Polanski did, because it's not just this film, it's also Repulsion and The Tenon and so many of his films that influenced me as an artist and a writer. And you've got to think, like, what was going on behind closed doors and how can I love this man's work so much? And especially as a writer myself, you know how much of yourself goes into that.
Yeah, I listened to that episode with Jesse in preparation for the Repulsion episode to see how you guys had addressed it. And also to like not say the same things that you had said in that episode about Polanski. Yeah. And, you know, I was interviewing Mary Laws, one of the screenwriters of Neon Demon and the showrunner of Monsterland on Hulu. And that was one of my favorite episodes. It was also like a Zoom episode. And I was just blown away by how frickin' smart she is and what a great interview she was and how, you know, bold and confident and, you know, just willing to have this conversation about Polanski. And she and I were both talking about how we love Repulsion so much and have such a hard time sort of reconciling. But I was sort of saying, oh, I have a really hard time reconciling it. And she was just like, nope, love the movie. I'm going to like accept that, you know, I'm going to sort of say, this is this person. He's not a good person and he's done some really bad things, but like this movie is still important to me. And it was a really fascinating conversation just to hear her talk about it. And we talked a little bit about Woody Allen as well, because she was talking about how her partner, who's a comedian, was struggling a lot with Woody Allen and you know, continuing, trying to continue to appreciate his work and what that meant. But she was so smart. She had some really interesting things to say on the topic. So I was so grateful to her for just like knocking it out of the park on that conversation, because it's not necessarily easy. But I think that you're exactly right. We are ready to have these conversations and to kind of wade into like the really thorny areas of it and acknowledge that there are no easy answers when it comes to these people.
Something that I realized while doing the show too, is that it's not just the Roman Polanskis. It is literally, there is abuse and bad shit happening in all areas of film. And so it wasn't just in those two movies that these kind of ambiguous, morally ambiguous things and ethically ambiguous things would come up. They came up again and again and again in multiple episodes of like having to kind of like, you know, recalibrate our feelings about people and creators. And that's something that I hope we were able to always approach with honesty and openness.
Well, that Rosemary's Baby episode, yeah, it was episode 7. And I feel like that really set the tone for a lot of future episodes in terms of our handling of just garbage men who are, you know, abusers. And because it was like, that was the first one where we were like, how are we going to tackle this, appreciating the film, not appreciating the man, and just kind of walking that delicate path? Because if you think this, Switchwood Sisters came out in August of 2017. That was when our first episode came out. And like the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out in October of that year. So we were very much, and that number 7 episode, I think, came out in November or something like that. So it was all happening right around that time. And so it was, yeah, that was just kind of a watershed episode for us. And I feel like it kind of made way for how we carried out those conversations in future episodes.
Yeah, we started our show like I think right before the waves of
right
both
before.
Like you know, abuse allegations and reckonings, and also just like women and marginalized people getting more of a shot to make movies. Like this is a huge sea change that has happened in the 3.5 years that we've been doing the show. It's kind of incredibly wild to think about the fact that we struggled to get guests in the first like 6-7 months of the show. And now it's, you know, like as we kind of wend our way through the final episodes, like it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
People were pitching us all the time.
The concept was difficult for people to understand, I feel like, in the early goings of it, like publicists and like, you know, I don't know who I was talking about this with, but it just, I feel like people didn't care about female filmmakers wanting to hear them talk. I mean, I remember like when Birds of Prey came out, We had Kathy Yan on the show. If that was like Zack Snyder or like any of, you know, anyone doing any sort of big Marvel movie or anything, they would have shown up with, you know, like agents and publicists and like a whole entourage of people, which happens sometimes when we have bigger names in the office. Kathy Yan drove herself to the interview and like just was like, hey, I'm Kathy Yan. And it was like, oh, come, please come on right in. You know,
I'm here to talk about my huge DC movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what the fuck, you guys? Like, I'm still like, I just don't understand sometimes. I'm just like, you know, we're still kind of mistreating these people.
Casey just said Zack Snyder's name a little weird, so I'm going to coast
on
what
did I say?
Schneider, and I loved it. And I'm
the
just going to take
cut.
That. Right? Release the Schneider. All I'm picturing is the janitor from One Day at a Time.
Well,
Listen, I'm a hotshot Hollywood movie producer. You have until I finish my glass of kombucha to pitch me your idea. Go.
All right, it's called Who Shot Ya? A movie podcast that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes. I'm Iffy Whiteyway, the new host of the show and a certified BBN.
BBN?
Buff black nerd.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, an elderly gay and legit film critic who wrote a book on Christmas movies.
I'm Drea Clark, a loud white lady from Minnesota.
Each week, we talk about a new movie in theaters and all the important issues going on in the film industry.
It's like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets Cruising.
And if it helps seal the deal, I can flex my muscles while we record each episode.
I'm sorry, this is a podcast? I'm a movie producer. How did you get in here?
Iffy, quick, start flexing.
Bicep, lats, chest. Who Shot Ya? Dropping every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
May I talk about briefly, so I was also a guest on the show.
Yes.
In addition to getting to be in the Max Fun Drive promos and threatening Casey's life, which was a real, just a dream come true. And it's because I was earlier on, and this before I became an unpaid booking assistant who worked for High Fives and April's Approval.
Very unpaid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all I've ever wanted is like just April to like me. So it's really like that's all I needed. But it's here's a spoiler. I have a big drop. What a breaking news is. The movie that we discussed on my episode, The Witch Who Came from the Sea, came from The Witch Who Came from the Sea? Why am I getting the name wrong?
Mm-hmm.
I want to add a beneath in there. Anyway, The Witch Who Came from the Sea. So most people are like, oh, yeah, great. Let me give you some ideas. April was like, oh, yeah, we're friends already. You're going to do this movie. And I was like, yeah, great.
I was so bossy with her.
Sign me up. But because of that, I remember listening and I was never, I'm not a good guest in the way that so many of your guests were because you were like, why did you want to talk to me about this movie? And I was like, oh, well, I just like how you talk about things. Like not espousing the like weirdness of the movie or how much I like just the like gender switches that are going on in terms of power structures and violence. But no, April, I just like how you talk about things. But I do think it's good breaking news this late in the game, several years later, for people to know that indeed one April Wolf informed me of what my favorite genre movie was.
And have you seen it before?
She had, and I forced her to watch
it. I don't think I had.
So Drea, she has selected today to talk about one of my favorite movies that not that many people see. And it is called The Witch Who Came from the Sea. Can you tell me about why you selected that?
Well, the title really spoke to me as a witch who came from the sea. No, I think that like many people in film, I've benefited from having friends who are cooler than I am with great tastes and was introduced to this film in such a way. And, you know, I've been listening to Switchblade Sisters, I'm a big fan of it, and I really enjoy the idea of not just exploring older works, and a lot of them have been popular, but also I've learned about some films that I haven't really heard about before or been familiar with. So that is interesting to me, and I also really like there's like comparative literature classes that everyone had to take in college. And we're like, what? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And there's something about The Witch Who Came from the Sea that has weird similarities, not necessarily genre and tone, to No Light and No Land Anywhere, the film that I have that's coming out in March, but that are there, that are about this sort of women dealing with something from their past, motivated by their fathers. And yeah, I just thought it'd be a very... Plus, I like how you put things together, like Jenga style. Or I guess it's taking things apart Jenga style.
Yeah, I destroy them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, all right, I want the April Wolf treatment on both these things.
Unfortunately, I think I sent you a link and I was like, you need to watch this.
Yes.
I had watched the movie that you produced and I was just like, this is incredible, but... the parallel to this other movie is like, yeah. We can't let this go. You I were was like, this is good. Yeah. This is good podcasting, people.
It
like,
really was. It was very, they were very symbiotic in strange ways. You were like, Drea, here's the thing. I'm not going to do a Matilda and 9/11 whole thing. I'm not bringing together these disparate worlds like Captain America style holding on to the helicopter. No, indeed, my friend. These have built-in connections. And therefore, this is your favorite genre movie. And, you know, to this day, it is. So thank you for that. I would put it on my name tag proudly still. Really, I don't know why I'm giving this spoiler because I'm blowing up myself in terms of not being as cool as April made me look.
No. She's very cool. She's especially if you saw the movie that she produced. I mean, like, there's a reason. It's very similar. In weird ways.
It is a very weird. Witch it is called No Light and No Land Anywhere. Please feel free to seek it out. Thank you. Are there any other calls? I'm going to do April. I could feel that you wanted to ask Casey that, so I just got in there.
Hey, all. This is Kara from New York City. I just wanted to let you guys know there's a transgender woman who often suffers from imposter syndrome. This podcast has been a great reminder that my love of horror and other genre cinema doesn't invalidate my inherent womanhood. So I really want to thank you guys so much for that and for the fact that you've introduced me to so many great films and filmmakers that I may have missed out on otherwise. So thanks again.
Hell yeah.
Yes. One of us. One of us. Yeah,
one
right?
One of us.
I love genre fans.
Kai, you rock. That was awesome.
Katie, if you were a guest on this show, which movie would you pick? You're the only one who hasn't been a like interviewed guest because April was also.
I would choose my favorite movie of all time, which is Brian De Palma's Carrie.
Your favorite period piece? Sorry.
Jesus Christ, I can't.
I don't know why I'm invited. Very good.
I mean, my second one would probably be Phantom of the Paradise. I just, you know, the De Palma of it all. But yeah, I would have to choose Carrie. It would be like out of character if I didn't choose Carrie at this point.
When you first told me about this podcast and the idea of it, my words were, and again, I want to put the time in case there's royalties coming my way. I said, oh, I would do Black Christmas, the 70s version, which April did not listen to or respond to, but I do want to put that out there. And also that I'm sure I planted a seed of some sorts, and we'll see some kind of back end.
Did you thread the needle on that one?
Oh, God bless you, Katie. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then it connected a lot of things.
Yeah, it did. I knew I'd suck you guys into this. I knew this strained metaphor would just seep into all of our worlds.
Well, I mean, but that's the funny thing about this podcast is like it's become more than a podcast. Like there's so many women who, you know, like Bria Grant was a guest. I interviewed Natasha for Lucky and like all these, like, you know, it is a small community of women and women filmmakers that is getting bigger by the day, which is so great. But then like, mm-hmm. you know, friends and people who know each other and, you know, it's just such a fun connected community by each of our friendships are the threads. Like connected together.
And but it's not a like velvet rope one. I think that's good for people to know that this is April, you know, spoke about that earlier. I've found that as well. I've worked in film festivals for 20 years now as a programmer. And there's, especially with female filmmakers, there's this open door for so many of them of realizing maybe how difficult it was for them and mm-hmm. being fully not just willing to give a hand up, but like looking around for who needs hands. And as much as it can be the thing of, oh, this person came on because I knew someone or whatever, I'd hate that to ever come across like it was exclusive rather than a, oh, how fun, this person came on because someone else knew someone who was excited to get them on. Rather, you know, I guess I just hear about things, there's that idea of like the good old boys club. Oh, and I think this is the opposite of that, of, ooh, who wants to come on into this club? Make some movies, talk about movies. I think it's just it's more welcoming that way.
You can sit with us. That's the motto. You can sit with us.
Just don't be an asshole. That's it.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And sometimes I'm an asshole, but like, don't do it all the time.
Sure, but that's your thing, April.
That's like, my thing.
there's really only room for one of those. So yeah. Yeah.
More calls.
Hi, April and crew. My name is Patrick. I'm from Ohio, and I am so sad that Switchblade Sisters is ending, although I am very glad for the reason. April is the best synopsizer I have ever heard in my entire life, and I really saw so many movies I wouldn't have even, I would have just like breezed by because of Switchblade Sisters. I think one of the things that's the most unique to me, besides, of course, the focus on women as filmmakers, is relating the thing that they're talking about back to their practice. You'd think that'd be something everybody wants to do. But so often when you listen to a podcast or read an article, people are talking about their favorite works. They're not talking about the ways that they incorporate that work into the art they produce. And that's something that April was always so good at, crafting questions and finding points to elaborate on. And I will just miss it so much. Thank you so much for putting the podcast together and all the research that you did. And good luck.
Aww.
That was great. He sounded so nice. I'm going to claim him as a Minnesotan.
I was just going to say.
He said he's from Ohio.
Oh, he did say that.
He's Ohio, but you know, in my head, I'm assuming he's got to be, I don't know. He lives at Cedar Point. I don't know. He seems the kind of guy who's like feeling joy in his life all the time.
Yeah. Maybe he owns Clinton a farm Bay. Outside Sandusky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. You know, we had some people who responded to our news on Twitter who said, there's like one person who said, I got into movie podcasts through a podcast that talked about how shitty movies were. And this is the one that introduced him into movies where you could talk about how much you loved things. And so it changed his perspective of stuff. And I think that was such a lovely sentiment to receive that, because it's not like I don't hate shit. I love hating shit. Like, it's one of my favorite things is to like text Ingu Kang and be like, hey, here's this shit I hated. But
same.
But you know, when you find these things that you like can love and be joyful about, I think that especially right now is just something that a lot of people appreciate. And I hope that other podcasts continue to do things like that. There's a bunch. It's so funny. There's a bunch that have kind of like started seeping up since we've been doing Switchblade. I went on one, Scarred for Life, that I thought was just really wonderful because they talk about movies that scared them when they were kids. And that was one where it's just like, oh, here's this thing that I have the sense memory about. And, you know, that's something that we can all connect to. I love that.
You're such a secret softie, April.
I'm not even that secret softie. It's just that I don't have.
Okay, Michigan. Never, it is a little buried.
Look, when you don't have friends growing up, like a lot of the things that are happening are inside of your brain. Like you're not showing it outward. There's no one to show it to.
From this childhood is killing me. Talk about a horror movie. Oh,
I know. Casey, do you have any more calls?
We have one more call.
Let's do it.
Woo.
Hello, Switchblade Sisters. This is Uma calling in from Australia. Just wanted to say a big thank you for all the work put in. I love your show, and it really inspired me, and it's the reason, basically, that I'm at film school right now. I just never thought I could become a director or be in film, and hearing so many amazing, accomplished women in the roles that they sought after and fought for and worked for really drove me to realize I can do it as well. And aspired to one day be on the show, but it's ending now, but that's okay. Anyway, I would have picked Ginger Snaps if I'd been on the show. I love this movie and I think it's iconic and not that well known, I think. So like no one's picked it yet, which I'm kind of surprised about. I mean, it's in the vein of Jennifer's Body. But yeah, just a really fun horror movie about werewolves and sisters, and I love anything werewolf oriented or witchy. Anyway, this is getting too long. Just want to say thank you and good luck with everything in the future, and can't wait to see your projects that you're making the time for. Bye.
That's so great.
So good. I was like tearing up just thinking about her being so inspired by the people who are on the show, because they are so inspiring. They're so smart and so cool. And I love Ginger Snaps. It's so good. So good.
Because you love a period piece.
I love a period. I do. My thing is like weird sex stuff and period blood, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a mood. It's a mood.
Oh my gosh.
I think that really hits on like what made the show so great is that it really did demystify the filmmaking process. You know, I think you're really, you know, when I was in film school, people were always like, oh, you have to be like this weirdo genius actually to succeed, or you need to like do drugs all night and be this insane person. It just seems like out of reach in a lot of ways. And it isn't. And it is possible for anyone who wants to be a filmmaker to just do it. And I just think that was like one of the best things about the show was getting to hear people's story of how they became the filmmaker and how they ended up being a guest on our show, basically.
There's also something, as counterintuitive as it may seem, there's something encouraging about hearing if it was a difficult process for somebody else, like to hear women talk about the years of work they put in other fields or adjacent fields within production, or the setbacks they had, what it took. And I think that is something, if you are, you know, trying to, you know, hoping to be a filmmaker and building something independently, if those things seem insurmountable, it's hard to keep going. But if you've seen, oh no, I heard this person did it and look what they made, and now I got to hear about all that went into them getting there, there's a real source of light that comes from that.
Yeah, just like the boldness. I think I've heard some really cool stories of people on this podcast just going for it. Like, I think about Allison Anders. Like, she just wrote letters to Wim Wenders. Like, just was like, I'm going to work for you, and was like persistent enough that he was like, sure, come be on the set of Paris, Texas. And like, just the go for it. Like, you can go for it. You're allowed to, you should. Like, we give you permission to do everything that you dream of doing. And like, here's how to do it. I mean, not totally here's how to do it, but here's some pointers. And like, it's such a, yeah, I love that it's like empowered people. And that's so important.
I'd add to that that I think there's something with a lot of women, at least for myself, that a hesitancy to do something until you know that you can do it well, that you know how to do it already. And that's really not how film often works. And it is not something that has held back a lot of our male compatriots, comrades, whatever. But I think that women knowing that it's okay to dive in with passion and just be prepared to problem solve rather than don't do it until you know everything about doing it. I think that's just a really important mindset. And I think that that's also come across in a lot of the stories that people were sharing about their own filmmaking and television writing and everything else.
I think the thing is that we inspired a lot of filmmakers, young filmmakers coming up, hopefully to try their hand, to make a short, to go to film school, to do these other things. But I think that, you know, I've been reticent to say that we've also inspired me to continue doing things. I came out to LA so many years ago with a dream to make things. You know, I had a playwriting degree. I was like, went to a state school, didn't know anyone. I didn't know what I was doing. And also I was a woman and I had no idea. I ended up having to like move away, try to do other things. Eventually I came back and was, you know, working in development, was trying to plug away. Eventually the LA Weekly job came along and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to lean into film criticism. It's close enough to what I want to do. But I was so sad. There was still like this kind of ache in my heart that I didn't get to do what I dreamt of doing for so long. And through doing Switchblade Sisters, through kind of spilling that passion and hearing other filmmakers, like I ended up getting to do my own dream. And, you know, I'm very close to where Oom was at. Where, yeah. It's I'm sorry. It's inspired me to do things and for me to fulfill my dreams. And, you know, before my grandpa passed, he got to know that I was successful at this, that I did that, and that I took the chance, and that, you know, I'd love to talk. I would love to announce all the things that I have coming up. There's a lot of stuff, movies, TV, things that are happening, and I owe it all to, you know, all of our guests, all of our listeners, all the people who came in week after week and inspired me and inspired everyone else. And yeah, I just, I love the show. And I'm going to miss it.
We're going to all miss it.
Well, cheers to you, April.
Cheers to April.
Cheers to April.
For putting this show
together. Cheers to all you guys.
I'm going to cheers Casey. I do love to point
cheers
out.
Cheers producer Casey.
The man behind
producer
the mic.
Producer Casey, but the man behind all of the wonderful production that we have, all the guests.
Well, April, I just want to say, you know, I was not your choice to be producer. They just gave me to you. And, I know you didn't have a choice, but hopefully you didn't hate it too much. And I think we made a really great team, and it makes me sad that I won't get to see you every week. And I'm just really proud of this show. I'm more proud of it than anything I've ever done. And it's changed my life and the way I think about movies, the way I think about myself as a man, and the way I think it's made me a better person. And I owe that all to you, April. So I just want to say thank you so much.
Cheers, oh my God,
Casey.
You guys,
it's been a lovely collaboration. I've
April
loved every
made
minute.
A friend. That's the full circle.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah. Casey, you are an angel on this earth. That's what I always think about you. Angel on this earth. All of you.
We
are.
Love Casey. I love you guys. I feel like we should probably be wrapping up the show.
Yes.
I again want to thank all of our listeners for sitting through all of my sobs here, and for tuning in for this one last episode, and for tuning in for all these years. And I want to thank Drea for being our booking agent. I want to thank Katie for being our excellent, excellent co-host on this show. Casey for producing everything. And that's all we've got. Do you guys have anything that you want to say wrapping up?
April, thank you so much for asking me to do this. I remember when you called me and asked me to fill in for you, and I was like so honored that you would toss me to the keys to the car. It's been such a joy, such a cool experience talking to all of these people, watching all of these films. It's been so much fun. I can't thank you enough for extending that offer to me. And I can't thank Casey enough for being such an awesome producer and helping me through this. And it's so cool. Thank you for letting me be a Switchblade sister.
Oh, Katie, it can be a hard job to come into somebody else's show and host. And you did such a wonderful job. And it was so easy to work with you. And so thank you so much for saving our butts so many times. And
so many times, yeah.
Just doing a great job filling in. So
thanks, guys.
So final goodbyes to all of our Switchblade sisters out there. You are loved and appreciated, and hope, you know, that you've liked the show. But as always, my motto is that it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie or podcast worth watching or listening to. And hopefully we were worth it to you. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.